Harding.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Koenig.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
This is Diamond Salisbury.
Hey everybody, this is John L.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you once again for tuning in to Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mowat. And now joining me as always is Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing today?
Very well, Kelsey.
Thank you for taking some time out on this cherished holiday, Labor Day.
Anything for you, my friend. Although, again, we're waiting for some scripted intros so we don't have to have the same one every time for every show.
Yeah, well, you know, no entries into the scripting contest yet, to no one's surprise, but, you know, maybe at some point.
You gotta come in. You gotta come in with some big prizes. That's what the problem is.
Probably, yeah. Questionable listener audience. But
are you questioning the literacy or the actual existence?
The actual size and depth of the listener audience. But you know, I don't know, man. You know, I say that, but I think we're doing not bad. I gotta say, well, this is show number 15, and there has been some progress. I noticed we get a little bit more feedback mail now, and it seems like on some of the sites to check out that people talk about the show, and I think there's quite a bit of downloads happening. So, and we also I should give word that it appears that our problems with uploading to IFL or to iTunes has been resolved. So that should as well allow people to download the show easier. So should have it up on iTunes right away. Maybe even this show.
So you say, Kelsey. I'm waiting to hear it.
Fair enough. I understand everyone's skepticism out there. It's completely justified, but I think this might be it. We're redoing the Full Contact Fighter website as well, so I think that's part of the reason that it's taken a while to get this sorted out with iTunes. But I appreciate everybody's patience, and that has been a common thread as far as feedback to letters being sent to radio@fcfighter.com, and a lot of people have been asked about iTunes. But yeah, dude, you know, we've had some listeners write me from France and Hawaii, Sweden. I just got one from Sweden, a guy named Pear.
Ireland,
yeah, as well. So, and of course, lots of Americans. So, and we have a good show today as well. We've got a couple guys, sort of up and coming fighters. More the angle of this show, we got Chris Horodecki, who's fighting on the IFL this Saturday in Portland, Oregon. He's taking on Ed West, and Chris Horodecki is an undefeated 18-year-old fighter out of Team Tompkins. And then we also have Victor Valimaki, who's one of Canada's better and younger 205 fighters. He's taking on Jason Day, who's also another great Canadian light heavyweight at the MFC in Edmonton, Alberta this Friday. So a couple young fighters, Brendan, that are showing some promise early on in their career.
I think, explain to me what's happening with the IFL. There's two shows in September.
Right. Show in Portland, Oregon, September 9th, and then September 23rd in Moline. And the main event this weekend is Jeremy Horn versus Matt Lindland. And then September 23rd, it's Henzo Gracie versus Pat Miletich. And both, and in all those cards, there are corresponding teams as well. So, got
right,
some action
right
there. And then you've got the Toronto Dragons are going to be fighting September 23rd, their first action. Wolfpack, which is Matt Lindland's team, fights for the first time this Friday, or Saturday, sorry. So you've got, yeah, a couple new teams in the IFL as well. So yeah, it's a big month for them for sure, two cards in 2 weeks.
And what's the TV schedule look like in the States for that?
I'm not sure yet, actually. To be honest, I don't know. I think they have to tape it, and then we'll see as far as when they're showing it. Let me just check here. So, okay, now I'm looking at the schedule for Fox Sportsnet. Starts on Sunday, September 24th. Now, whether or not that's the September 23rd card, I doubt it would be. But, yeah, they got a whole slate of shows, Brendan. They got September 24th, October 1st, 2nd, October 8th. It's crazy. November 12th, 19th, 26th. So there's going to be a ton of IFL on Fox Sportsnet. And then, of course, for Sportsnet Canada up here, they'll be picking up that same show. They divide it, I think, into usually three or four fights per hour-long show. So.
Oh, good.
So yeah, let's get to it then, and bring on Chris Horodecki and Victor Valimaki. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the San Jose Razor Claws, led by Frank Shamrock, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic super match of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV. Cards subject to change.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing full-contact fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets, to camel board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic full-contact fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a full contact fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full contact fighter, the undefeated, no holds barred new source of the world.
This is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is Mr. Chris Horodecki. Chris, how are you doing today?
Doing great, bro. What's going on?
Oh, not much. What are you up to today on this Saturday afternoon?
I just finished some training, yeah. Resting up, do some sprints, and call it a day, rest.
Right. Now, Chris is going to be taking on Ed West next Saturday in Portland, Oregon, at the International Fight League. And Chris, what do you know about Ed West? He's got a pretty good record of 8-1. What do you expect Ed's going to try to do against you?
Yeah, I heard he's a wrestler from Arizona with, you know, pretty decent skills. He's fought Rage in the Cage before. That's where he's done all his fights. I expect him to probably come out, work for a takedown, work for a ground and pound. And I'm ready for that, ready for anything that he can bring, and I'm going to play my game like always, stand up, but if we want to wrestle, we want to work the clinch, it's not a problem.
Now, I know some of the guys, you're of course representing Team Anaconda, which is Boss Rutan's team, and your main instructor and manager, Sean Tompkins, is the assistant coach. Chris, have you had time to go down and train in L.A. with Boss, or have you just still been mostly training with the Team Tompkins guys up in
nope,
London?
No, I just got back from 3 weeks of training. We actually trained with Dan Henderson. Dan flew us out 3 weeks ago for 2 weeks to train with him, get ready for his fight in Pride. It was really good training up there, and then we went to L.A., Thousand Oaks, where we trained with Boss and the rest of the team, the Anacondas. Got ready for the IFL show on the 9th.
Oh, wow. You know, your IFL debut came against Eric Owings. You got the knockout win in the first round. And what was that like for you, Chris, to have such a successful debut and have a, you know, kind of like a highlight reel win for your IFL debut in the States?
It was awesome, bro. Just a really great way to finish the fight the way I did, in a very decisive manner. The fight went really good with Eric. I knew he was going to be tough, and just to be able to win the way I did just shows that the type of fighter that I am. I'm an entertaining fighter, and I always come to fight, and I'm ready anytime.
Now, Chris, you're only 18 years old, unless you've turned 19 since I last talked to you last. You're still 18, right?
Nope, I'm still 18.
Yeah. And what's it like for you, Chris? I mean, you've got a record 5-0. You also got an amateur fight in there, so I think your record's 6-0 if you look at the pro-am combined. And you know, some people are starting to take notice, Chris. Do you feel pressure at all? You know, being such a young fighter, are you starting to feel that pressure? Or are you one of those kind of guys that sort of excels and enjoys that kind of pressure?
No, I really like it. I really just don't. I try to, you know, avoid all the pressure. and absorb what it is. You know, I'm really blessed to be where I am, in the position that I am, and I take total satisfaction from it. You know what I mean? Not a lot of people would like to be in the position, you know, where we are, and I'm very blessed to be at such a young age that I can do what I am. So I'm very thankful. And in terms of pressure, I really just try to stay away from that. I keep relaxed, and I know what my objectives are, what my goals are, and I'm just out there to perform.
Now, for a lot of people, they'd be very curious to know what it's like training with Boss Rudin. We've had him on the show, and I've talked to several guys who've had the privilege of training with Boss. And just give us a little bit of insight into what it's like training with Boss Rudin and what that camp's like, and how much, you know, I think a lot of people are curious, too, is with the team concept in the IFL, are you guys making a concerted effort to make sure that the team trains together at least for a couple of weeks prior to the fights?
Yeah, that's key. What we're trying to do, Boss and my coach Sean Tompkins, we really try to stress that team concept, trying to bring us all together. The team is mostly stationed out of Vegas, and we all circulate around the California area. So we will make sure that whether we have to go there or they come to us, we're always going to be training as a team. Over these past weeks, we've grew as a team. Me, Jay, Mike, Alex and Christoph, you know, we've all grown together, bonded, so working together, like the ego, there's no ego, we all work together, we all have the same goal in mind, and it really, really creates some great training. After the fight, you know, there's the guys, Mike and Jay, they're coming down to train with us, and they're coming down to Canada to train with us, after about like a week later, after the show, so there's a really cohesive team aspect that we got going on.
Yeah, and we should list off, you know, that we're talking about the members of the Team Anacondas: Jay Huron, Mike Pyle, Chris Osaczynski, Alex Schoenauer. So definitely some recognizable names on the team, Chris.
Definitely. Now, we got a good group together.
Now, you, of course, are based out of Team Tompkins in London, Ontario, and maybe for some of the people who don't know a little bit about your background, you started training with Sean quite a few years ago now.
Oh, yeah. I've been training Sean 5.5 years now. I've done all my training with him from the get-go, through my kickboxing, amateur kickboxing, and now to my mixed martial arts.
You guys have a busy month coming up, and I know you don't want to look too beyond this upcoming fight against Ed West, but you are still scheduled to fight Samuel Gillette at the TKO 29 if you come out of this fight without an injury?
Yeah, that's the plan.
And then you've also got Sam Stout. Recently it was announced he's going to be taking on Jay Estrada. And is there any further news on whether or not Mark Hominick's going to be fighting Ivan Menjivar, if he's going to be fighting Hatsu Hioki? Do you know yet?
The situation, I'm not too sure right now. Ivan's fighting like a couple days later in
K1, yeah.
The K1 Heroes Tournament. So it looks that Mark wants to fight Hatsu. That's Mark's goal right now. You know, he really wants to fight Hatsu because he wants to avenge that loss. The big thing, he wants his belt back. Especially after having to just beat Jeff Kern.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, this is definitely a fight that he wants to take. Originally, the fight with Hatsu was supposed to go on, but we were kind of worried with Jeff that if Hatsu could get injured with Jeff, and we didn't want to have any situation where there'd be an injury.
Right.
And a cancellation of a fight. So Mark decided to take the fight with Ivan, but now that Hatsu is open, I don't know. We really don't know.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to ask the Admiral, Steve Tompkins. You got to ask Sean.
Now, of course, Jeff Curran, as some people don't know, is helps train you guys in his jiu-jitsu program, and it helps you guys out with your jiu-jitsu. And, yeah, of course, you just lost to Hatsu Hioki. We had Jeff on the program a couple weeks ago. But just tell people a little bit about that and your involvement with Jeff Curran.
Yeah, definitely. Jeff's a big part. We work like an inter-club relationship. We go down, we train with Jeff. Sam Stout and a bunch of other fighters returned. They went down to Jeff's club for about a week, last week or the 2 weeks before, when we were in California, just to get some extra jiu-jitsu training. It really worked well with Jeff. Jeff's top instructor in the U.S. for jiu-jitsu, so it's really good to have him, and he likes to take advantage of us when we have good spot. Like, we are really good kickboxers, so we help him out with his kickboxing, help him prepare for his fights, get some good sparring in, so we work hand in hand.
Now, Chris, you know, a lot of people, we already mentioned that you're only 18 years old, and I think a lot of people would want to know what it's life like for an 18-year-old professional fighter, and how does your family help you out with that? What do people say to you when they find out what you're doing, and what are your plans as far as, is this where you're concentrating on your professional career for the next couple of years, considering it's shown so much promise early on?
Well, I got a really good family behind me, a really good support group. I still live at home, you know what I mean, and with my family, my parents, my mom, she takes care of all my food and stuff, and, you know, really well to work with, and you know, maybe this isn't the ideal thing they want me to be doing, but they're 100% behind me. In terms of, I go to school still, and that's really key for my parents. You know, they really want me to stress to have a background, a backup plan, you know, because fighting any kind of sport, really, you have to have something to fall back on, because anything can happen, an injury, you know, anything can happen in the world of professional sports. So that's key with my family. It starts school next week, and it's going to be, you know, first week's going to be a little tough because we got the fight, but I managed, you know, balancing all my time management, you know, it's very key for me, and I make sure I try to, you know, stress both concepts in my life.
And you're going to one of the local colleges in London?
Going to local college for a paramedic program.
Right, okay. And what do people say to you? Like, I mean, I know you probably, it's not like you run around ranting and raving about how you're a professional fighter, but what, in general, what is the take on the, you know, when you meet someone and they find out that you do this? Is it kind of, do you find that the knowledge of mixed martial arts is growing, or people still have to ask you a lot of questions and not really fully cognizant of what you do?
Absolutely, especially in our city. You know, we got a lot of exposure, and we're really well known in our city in Canada. You know, the reaction's great. We get a great reaction from people, and they love it. So we're really proud to be representing mixed martial arts. We think we're doing the right thing, and we're representing our Canadian area and the Canadian mixed martial arts community well.
Now, you know, with the IFL, this is like one of the TKO for some of the American listeners. TKO has been shown up here on TSN and more often on RDS, which is the French network, sports network. And so some people in Canada have been able to see some of your fights via TV cable up here. But with the IFL, you know, it's shown on Fox Sports Network down in the States, and it's shown up on Sports Network here in Canada. But what's that like for you as far as now, you know, knowing that people are going to see you fight more and you know, the sport's growing and you are actually getting, you know, TV coverage outside the UFC, something that didn't really rarely happen, if at all, several years ago?
I think it's a necessity. We need to have, you know, more outlets for fighters to go to. Can't have just one big organization. You need to have opportunities for different ways for fighters to go. It's great. The exposure is awesome that we're going to have, and it's just an honor to be able to represent, you know, who we are on television. It's out of this world how far our sport's gone, to be able to watch it just like a normal, regular sport on TV.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
Now, I mean, I would guess that you would like to look towards the UFC at some point in your career. And have you been down there with Sam and Mark? Have you been able to experience the UFC?
Absolutely. Yeah, I just got back from the Chuck Babalu fight.
Right.
At Manly, it was awesome. We did a lot of training with Forrest Griffin.
Oh, okay.
We're in Las Vegas. We trained with Design Center in the Forrest Griffin's gym. So it was really good to see him come out on top. That's another group we have. We all kind of, another group that we keep together with. It's the Zion's gym down in Vegas.
Now, so, I mean, ultimately, I know you're happy with the IFL and the team concept there, etc., but would you like to get up on a UFC card at some point? Is that a goal, or are you just looking at the options now with the WFA and IFL? Is that not as much of a priority as, say, it probably would have been for fighters a couple of years ago?
You know, I just want to fight. You know, I'm really young, and whatever, you know, UFC, it's a great goal, and it's always, you know, if it's there, it's there. But for me, a fight's a fight, and I just want to keep doing what I'm doing, keep improving, and wherever my career takes me, that's where it takes me. You know,
Chris, you go by the Polish Hammer, very interesting nickname.
Right.
And why don't you tell people a little bit about why you chose that name and about your background? Obviously, you're pretty proud of the Polish heritage to go with that nickname.
Yeah, well, I never chose my nickname. It's given to me by my coach and my teammates.
Okay.
When I first started coming up, you know, just say I was a Polish kid. You know, I come from a very strong family, you know, raised from a Polish community. So just coming up in my first amateur fights, just knocking out kids, you know, right and left. So kind of just suited me well.
Are your parents, were they born in Poland, or
Absolutely,
are you guys,
yeah.
Okay, and you're first generation Canadian then?
Yeah.
Well, that's, I gotta say, Polish Hammer, it's, who, do you remember who came up with that one? Was it Sean or Sam or?
I think it's Sean, but I don't remember, it's been years now, so it's kinda fit me.
Well,
we got a few, you know, different nicknames given out here and there for everybody, but.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. Someone on the Full Contact Fighter writing staff, wasn't me. Someone that I think attended the IFL called you the new baby-faced assassin. And then the story that we just ran on you a couple months ago, they wanted to use that nickname as well. Have you heard that one yet? The new baby assassin?
Yeah, I've heard that. You know, it's all good. It's all good. I like it.
It's kind of crazy now, you know. I mean, obviously, you're quite young. You're 18, and people always make remarks about that, and that sort of raises everybody's eyebrows. But, you know, when you look around now, the sport's just getting so huge that, you know, that's becoming less and less a common occurrence. There's actually a lot of guys out there now. The sport's just growing so huge that there's a lot of young guys coming up. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, do you think that fairly soon, in a couple of years, that people won't necessarily be so surprised at 17, 18-year-old professional fighters?
I think it's always going to be a shock. Just because, you know, you've always seen fighters in their prime, you know, the big ones are in the prime at about 20, 28, 30 years old. And that's what, if you look at boxing, that's what a lot of the fighters are at. But it's definitely going to become more common, where you're going to see fighters are going to start 18, 19, 20, you know, and it's not going to be, a big shock. It's just going to open the doors, and it's a great thing to see, that people are, you know, they're going to start taking this sport and for a real sport.
Yeah, I did a story on Team Deshito, which is out of Kelowna, British Columbia, and they've got a young kid out of there. I think his name is Rory McDonald, and a lot of people, mm-hmm. have you heard about Rory?
I've heard a little bit about him.
Yeah.
He's pretty young, too.
Yeah.
And it just shows that, I've never seen him fight or anything, but it just shows that the skills that we have in Canada, and we're definitely, you know, nationwide, we're definitely a country to pay attention to.
Well, Chris, we appreciate you taking time out of your training. I know you're busy, and you got to head out the next few days here to get down to the States, and it's a long ways for you to fly. You got to go pretty much across the continent, so coming from London.
Yeah, back. I just got back from Pacific Coast, so back there next week. So.
Earning your air miles.
Yeah, well, I was earning the air miles.
Well, best of luck, Chris, and again, we appreciate you coming on the Polish Hammer. Joining us here on Full Contact Fighter Radio. Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thanks a lot, Kelsey. Thanks, everybody.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees nonstop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Hey, guys. Jason the Athlete McDonald, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Bowen.
The Matrix, Victor Valimaki, joins us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Victor, I understand you had a late night last night.
Yeah, very late. No sleep yet. Just got back from the hospital, actually. My wife gave birth to my second daughter last night at 3:40 in the morning.
Wow, well, congrats.
Congratulations. Thanks.
Now, Victor, you've got a big fight coming up next Friday, September 8th at the Shaw Conference Center in Edmonton. At the Maximum Fighting Championship, you're going to be taking on Jason Doomsday for the Light Heavyweight Championship of the MFC. How's your training coming along, Victor?
It's great. Great. Other than, you know, being in the hospital all night, that's, you know, about the only setback. Everything else has been going great. I don't think I've ever been in this kind of shape before.
Who do you train with out in Edmonton right now?
Quite a few guys. I kind of jump around a lot. I train with Jason McDonald mainly. Roger Alves, he's kind of a little bit newer in the MMA game, but he's a national champ wrestler several times. You know, hopeful to actually go to the Olympics for wrestling. A couple good boxers, James Cermak, he's a pro boxer out of Edmonton. You know, sometimes I go to the U of A and train with wrestlers. My main camp, I would say, is out of, it's called the Sniper Team, out of Arashio Martial Arts in Edmonton here.
Yeah. And that's like guys like Mike Yaklik, Mike Newton.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are my main training partners. Actually, lately it's been more with Jason McDonald and whatnot, just because my schedule has been so up and down with the expecting of the kid and whatnot. But, you know, you got to go with the flow.
Right.
How much time does Jason McDonald spend in Edmonton then? I thought he was fighting out of out of Lethbridge most of the time.
Well, out of Red Deer, actually.
Red Deer, sorry.
Yeah, it's about an hour and a half. You know, shows a little bit of dedication there. He drives up to Edmonton about 3 days a week. And then he drives down to Calgary a couple of days a week as well, to train with Josh Russell from Gracie Baja.
Mm-hmm.
So he's all over the place.
So my first question for you is that in this regards, of course, having, kids, I've, recently had a kid of my own, at least a couple of years ago. I'm still recovering from that shock. when you have kids and you've made a sort of commitment to other people in your life, how does that change the way you train, and how does that change the way you prepare for life, for fights, live your life, and how you see the next few years unfolding?
Well, I'm very fortunate enough to have a wife that's very, very understanding of it. She's been there pretty much since the beginning. I think it actually makes you just you train harder and prepare more for an event, because now you, like, I do work another job, but still, this is, you know, a source of income. So when you see someone across the ring from you, you know, trying to take food out of your kid's mouth, it kind of motivates you a little bit to push yourself harder and, you know, be able to support your kids a little bit better than you would otherwise.
Victor, you're taking on Jason Day, who trains out of Lethbridge at the Canadian Martial Arts Center. How much of Jason Day's fights have you seen, and what's going to be your game plan against a guy like Jason? What do you expect Jason to want to try to do against yourself?
Well, I expect Jason to come in. I know Jason very well. I've seen him fight a few times. I actually like the guy quite a bit. It's a shame I got to fight him. You know, I expect him to probably strike long enough just to close the distance with me and try to get me to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, with him in a dominant position. And I think that works really well for me, because I think my ground's my strongest attribute. So if it hits the ground, I think it's more of an advantage for me, you know, if I'm on top. Being on the bottom kind of always sucks, no matter if you're good on the ground or not. When you're on the bottom, it's not the funnest. So my game plan would be to probably stuff his takedowns, get on top of him, and then probably ground and pound or look for a submission.
Right.
Victor, my second question to you is kind of ties into what you're saying. When you're fighting someone you're more familiar with, do you are you at the level now you feel comfortable putting together a specific game plan, or are you just trying to play into your strong suits and rely on your strengths as a fighter? How much thought do you put in to planning out how you see the fight going?
I put a lot of thought into it. I'm a very cerebral fighter. I find if I don't have a good game plan going in, it's like the whole package doesn't seem to be there, and it seems like something's missing, and it, you know, things just don't flow as well as they should. But I find, you know, when I do have a good game plan, things tend to go very, very well. So, you know, I learned from experience, you know, if you don't have a game plan, it's probably not going to be a very good night for you if you just go in and try to wing it. So, you know, I actually spend quite a bit of time working game plans and things like that.
Now, Victor, you guys, both your early careers are somewhat similar in the sense that, I guess, similar and different, but Jason Day had a bit of a rough start to his career, and you had some promise, and then you ran into some injuries and had to take 3 years off before coming back. Maybe for the listeners, just tell us a little bit about why you took that break from fighting and what caused you to come back to professional competition.
Well, the reason I took time off is, I had my first daughter, first of all, so I decided to take some time off and you know, be a dad and that sort of thing, because it's first kid, you know, it's kind of an exciting time of your life and you want to be there as much as possible. I also took time to start a new career, did a little bit of schooling and became a personal trainer.
Oh, okay.
Not a ton of school for that by any means, but, you know, starting any new career, you want to be able to focus on that as well. So it's a combination of having a kid and starting a new career and injuries. I did a partial tear of my ACL in my left knee and meniscus in my left knee. And it was just a combination of all three things where I just had to take a step back and, you know, and take a look at my future and decide. And I realized I didn't want to do anything kind of half-assed. If I wanted to do it, I would have to do it, you know, 100%, put all my focus towards it. And the way it was going, it just wasn't going the way that I had hoped. Mm-hmm. So, and the reason I came back is I just love the sport. I'm a very competitive person by nature. And if I don't compete at something, then, you know, I'd probably lose my mind. I was never very good at team sports, but I seem to be, you know, at least, I like to think pretty good at individual sports like MMA.
Yeah.
So, Victor, can we expect to see from you a DVD series like Billy Blank, sort of an MMA size? for ladies at home?
Compare more to Boss Rudin, I think, not Billy Blanks. But, you know, maybe give it a couple of years and we'll see what happens.
No. You were scheduled to fight Travis Galbraith, and I've talked to Travis a couple times for, you know, covering his fights in King of the Cage. He's the Canadian light heavyweight champion now, I believe, beat Ricardo Francois. And,
yep.
Victor, a couple times, you guys were supposed to fight at the last MFC, MFC 9, I believe, and you had an injury. And he's often remarked that he would still like to fight you. Do you ever see that fight, you know, coming about, and, you know, especially in light of the fact that he's with King of the Cage now, and there has been some, you know, little crossover between the MFC and King of the Cage organizations in Canada?
Yeah, you know, there's always the politics. You got to play around it, and it's a shame. I know Ken from King of the Cage pretty well, and, you know, I'd love to actually work with him, but again, there's that politics aspect. As for fighting Travis, you know, I would like to fight him, not because I have anything against him. I actually... I don't know him very well, but what I do know of him, he seems like a pretty straightforward guy, and, you know, I don't have any animosity towards him whatsoever, but, just from a sport aspect, I would really like to fight him just to, you know, to compete at that level and push myself.
Right. Where do you see yourself in the Canadian light heavyweight ranks? I mean, Jason Day's won 5 in a row. He recently beat Chris Fontaine not too long ago. He's kind of been on a winning streak, and Travis Galbraith has put some wins together. And you're obviously in the mix with a record of 6-2, I believe. Where do you put yourself as far as you know, the Canadian light heavyweight rankings? And I know you don't want to look too far beyond Jason Day, but do you see yourself you know, at some point wanting to get into the UFC or some bigger shows in the States?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to do it as kind of like a journeyman. I'd rather do it as a career and actually take it as far as I possibly can. You know, I definitely see myself up there with the top guys in Canada. My record might not show at this point, but, you know, I'm just taking the fights that are put in front of me right now. And I just want to continue to take bigger and bigger and bigger fights and prove to people that I do belong at the top echelon there.
Yeah.
And compete with those guys. In my mind right now, probably the top guy in Canada, light heavies, Martin Desilets in TKO.
Right.
You know, just from seeing him fight a few times, I think he's the guy to beat. I don't think it is Travis, and, you know, I would say it is probably Martin.
What relationships does Maximum have with organizations out east, and could we see you fight in Quebec anytime soon?
I hope so. That's the plan. One of the losses on my record is against Rob McDonald, who obviously just fought in the UFC and didn't do that well. I'd like to clean up my record if at all possible, and I think he'd be a good guy. And they did offer me that fight against Rob McDonald back in May, I believe it was, in TKO, but just the timing of it didn't work out. So, you know, hopefully I could take him up on that offer again and, you know, and clean up my record. If not, anyone they throw in front of me, Martin Desilets, I'd like to fight. You know, I think that would be a very, very good challenge.
Now, you came back to action after the Rob McDonald fight, and I believe it was almost a 3-year break against,
yep,
Dan Severn for some people out there. And, you know, I think it's fair to say that Dan Severn, you know, wasn't in his prime of his career at that juncture, and his best days are behind him, but he's still a great fighter. What was that like, fighting a legend like Dan Severn, and what was your game plan going into that, Victor?
Game plan against him was to stay the hell away from him. I was, you know, I didn't really expect to take that fight. I was training to fight someone else, you know, to get to knock the ring rust off for my first fight back after 3 years. And there was just the boxing commission here in Edmonton didn't really, weren't going to sanction the opponent for Dan Severn that they had intended. So Mark Pavlich called me up and asked if I wanted to fight. And I said, yeah, I'll fight him. I mean, just even get in there with a name like that is, you know, win or lose is, you know, is a big step. And, mm-hmm. and I took that fight on, I think it was 4 days notice. The fight was a Friday. I was going to get the call, I believe, on a Tuesday. Monday or Tuesday, I took that fight on. And, you know, I thought the game plan went well. Obviously, you know, I won the fight. Not my most exciting fight by any means, but I won the fight, and, you know, that's the kind of game plan that I had to use against him, was just get the hell away from him, because if you let him bear hug you, you're, you know, he's a big man. He was 278 pounds, I think, at weigh-ins.
Did he wear that same sweet T-shirt that he wore four different times in UFC 4 or whenever we saw him first time?
No, not this time, no. He still had the same shorts, though.
My last question for you, Victor, is there's this awesome clip of you when I was doing research for the interview. I saw this awesome clip of you on the internet knocking yourself out trying a flying armbar.
That is
going to
haunt
ago.
Me. That is going to haunt me until my death, that video there.
So have you
I've emailed, that's Lee Means' website that's off of. I've emailed him so many times about that thing, trying to get him to take it off, and it still pops up all over the place.
Well, I'm requesting the technique, but not knocking yourself out this time. But I'm requesting in your fight the refined technique to a finish.
Yeah,
that's what happens when you're 220 pounds and you try to do a flying armbar. It doesn't work the way it looks when, you know, someone's 150 pounds trying it out. It's just, in theory, it looks good, but not when you land on your head.
How many years ago was that? That was a few years ago, wasn't it?
That was probably 4 years ago.
Yeah,
and that was just in a grappling tournament down in Lethbridge. It was in the final. Against one of Lee Means' guy, Wyatt Lewis. And, we were tied on points, and both of us were kind of pretty tired, so I think we were both stalling, and you know, I said, hell, what the heck, I'm gonna try something out, and obviously it didn't work very well, but.
Well, in your defense, Victor, I was at the grappling tournament where you took on Rodrigo Mandaruca, for those who don't know, is the jiu-jitsu instructor that taught Joe Dirksen and Chris Fontaine. Christoph Szczesny is a very famous instructor from Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And you took him on in a grappling match and did extremely well against, I believe he's black belt under Silvio Baring, or was at one point. So, you know, and you were impressive in that. And you know, you were mentioning earlier in the interview about your ground skills, and for sure, I mean, I think if people just see you as a stand-up fighter, that's a huge misconception.
Yeah, it seems like lately it has seemed that I am a stand-up fighter. I think my last three fights have been predominantly like standing up, but the ground is definitely where I'm most comfortable. It just hasn't really ended up there that much lately.
And what about your brother Danny Valimaki? He's had, I believe, one fight. He beat Marcus Hicks, who's a fighter from the Vancouver area, if I believe. Where is Danny at in his career? Does he have some fights coming up?
He is fighting September 9th, the day after I'm fighting, down in Calgary.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of the event.
The Bushido Reality Fight Series?
Yeah, that's the event. And he's fighting one of Lalo Marin's guys, Maxi Marin's brothers, training partners.
Is Danny training with you, or...?
On and off. Yeah. He's probably the busiest guy I've ever seen in my life. He's going to school right now. You know, he's trying to get a degree. He's working and he's trying to fight. So he'll go 3 days without eating type thing, right?
And he's younger than you, right?
Pardon?
He's younger than you? Is he your younger brother?
He is. Oh, yeah. He's 18 months younger than I am.
Oh, okay.
A year and a half younger. So, but I honestly believe if he dedicated himself to fighting, he'd be very, very scary. So in training, he's one of these guys who won't train for 6 months. He'll come in and mop the floor with guys who train 6 days a week every day, right? So, he's just one of those genetic freaks.
One other note before we let you go, Victor, just tell us a little bit about the function you were at this afternoon. The MFC held a barbecue to help feed the homeless in Edmonton. Just tell us a little bit about that and what you guys are doing down there this afternoon.
That was just a thing Mark Pavlich mentioned a while back. He just said, hey, let's do something different. You know, a lot of people kind of thought it as a publicity stunt type thing, but I actually honestly had nothing to do with that. It was just, you know, a bunch of us got together and Mark spent out of his own pocket. He, you know, a thousand hot dogs, pop, chips, everything, and we just spent 2 hours down there this morning. They did. I spent about half an hour down there. I went directly from the hospital to kind of pitch in a little bit, but, mm-hmm. you know, I caught the last tip of it. And, you know, I didn't know what to expect from it, but a lot of people came out to it, which is not a good thing because it was, you know, meant for homeless. So,
yeah.
You know, a ton of homeless people is definitely not a good thing. But, you know, there was definitely a lot of appreciation there, and it never hurts to help people out.
No, absolutely. Brendan, do you have anything else for Victor?
Well, I have to say that if your promoter Mark Pavlich comes through with some tickets for Kelsey and I to cover the show, I don't get to see many live fights these days, as Kelsey and I have been flown down to Vegas in a while.
Right.
I'm requesting the flying armbar.
Okay.
and there's good precedent now because Minnow did not one but two flying drop kicks against Butterbean on the weekend. So this is the wave of the future.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
This dynamic technique. So I'm requesting flying armbar to the finish at any point in the fight would be fine.
Off the top rope though. Off the top rope.
Whatever you feel it. Whatever works for you.
Yeah, I'll make sure it's in a soft spot on the mat though.
Yeah. That sounds good.
Congratulations.
And congratulations, by the way. Yeah.
Take care.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, some interesting comments from Victor Valimaki, Chris Horodecki. And the MFC, which is going off this Friday, September 8th, there's actually been a change in the lineup. Apparently Tyrone Roberts, who is a well-traveled MMA fighter, has trained with Pat Miletich some, and has a fairly good record. He's dropped out against Jason McDonald. So I guess they've announced his replacement, who I don't know anything about, is Edwin Aguilar from New Mexico, I believe. So change in one of those. It wasn't the main event of the card, but it was billed as like super fight. So kind of I don't want to. Obviously, Edwin Aguilar's got a record of 9-7, and I'm sure the MFC wouldn't bring him in if he doesn't have some credible fighting skills. But you kind of got a feel for Jason McDonald because I think he's kind of looking to take out one more. Well-experienced...
Bigger name,
exactly,
yeah.
To try to get in the UFC. And now, if he beats Edwin Aguilar, will that do it for him? I don't know.
Well, I think the criticism is that he'd almost drop one fight in four or something like that, and he needs to go on a bit of a streak.
Right.
So, who knows? Maybe the streak will be good enough. And, certainly, I think he's game enough to be fighting in the UFC, so we'll see. We'll see how things unfold.
Well, it's interesting, too, because he defeated Gideon Ray. Apparently it was only a few weeks before Gideon Ray headed to the Ultimate Fighter filming, and this isn't a spoiler because that show aired already. Edwin Deweys beat Gideon Ray. Did you see that fight, Brendan?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, nice fire hydrant of blood for the for the new viewers of MMA.
Well, you see, there's been the Kang's fight was fairly graphic and bloody, but that last fight probably had to be the most blood actually literally pouring out of someone's a cut on someone that I think I've seen in a long time in the UFC. And it's good that everyone kept their composure because the cut was really in a weird place on top of the head. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because like that's
fairly graphic.
Yeah, I've got that fight, which was free. It was on Spike, and then for a lot of people who. With the UFC getting so many new viewers, and then you had the Joe Stevenson Eves Edwards fight last month, and another fire hydrant of blood.
Yeah,
in that
exactly.
One, so,
yeah. Well, I think the elbows. If you ever saw Loazzo's first fight against Loazzo's fight against Rivera.
Yeah.
Loazzo at that time, I don't think had dialed in his elbows, and he kept on elbowing Rivera in the side of the head, and Rivera inevitably won that fight. And he didn't bleed very much, but he literally had holes punched in each side of his head.
Yeah, I do remember that.
These massive cuts on the side of his head, but not on the front, so it really didn't bleed that much. So
it happens. And, you know, I guess the story is that as long as the fighters can see and as long as the blood doesn't affect your vision, it seemed to be affecting Ray's vision, though, because Deweese was bleeding right into his eyes, which is kind of disgusting, I thought.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's definitely a credible debate, and I think that, you know, some of us are so accustomed to the way MMA is, and we've grown up, so to speak, watching it with the current North American rules, and, you know, I think it's something to consider. You know, I am, like, I guess, somewhat of a purist, and I like to see elbows continue to be used because they're such an effective tool, but on the flip side of that, you have to kind of look at the growth of the sport, and you sort of do have to wonder. I know Full Contact Fighter Loretta Hunt did a story on this, it was a few months ago now, about the fact that, you know, perhaps North American promotions that still allow for elbows should review that, just simply for the fact that it can be quite a gory spectacle, and it can stop fights with cuts that aren't even necessarily, you know, really shouldn't stop a fight other than for the fact, you know, the fighter's not really harmed other than the fact that he's just bleeding a lot and it looks bad. And, you know, most times you do see some blood in Pride, but they don't allow elbows, and you don't see it as often.
Mm-hmm. I think on the whole, elbowing has got a favor, is a great equalizer for less skilled fighters to end fights, I think. Heath Edwards, Joe Stevenson, Stevenson's elbows were punishing as well, but I think that fight would have looked differently without elbows, but it would be a different fight as well, you know. And you know, pro wrestlers were very sensationalistic in using that kind of blood, and the fact that when you cut your forehead, even the tiniest cut will bleed like crazy, and they would you see pictures of pro wrestling from the 70s of the guys drenched in blood, and they would just, you know, have a little razor blade and cut themselves, and the blood, when you started sweating and your heart started pumping, would just go everywhere. And they've always made use of that fact. And should that sort of accident of physiology be responsible for stopping a fight? I'm not sure. I think I'm kind of on the fence about elbows, because I really appreciate fighters like Luwazo who can literally throw elbows to stop a fight, but I'm not as sympathetic to wrestlers who can achieve top dominance and couldn't finish a fight any other way but to, you know, cause a cut. So,
well, I wouldn't, you know, I understand what you're saying. I wouldn't throw Joe Stevenson in that light. I think he's an extremely talented grappler. I don't know if that's what you're getting
at. No, and I do too.
But I know what you're saying. I mean, when you look at the Luwazo fight as an example, and I enjoy watching David fight, and nice guy, and Canadian fighter that's done very well, so it's great to see. But I think, you know, when you look at the Evan Tanner fight, he was in some trouble, and then he opened up, Tanner with a couple fierce elbows. But I guess you could also say in that fight as well, it appeared that Tanner was dazed, too, so it wasn't just simply a cut that ended up bleeding a lot, and it wasn't like he was in trouble. But, yeah, I mean, you do see that happen from time to time. You know, Chris Liebman, the fight against Kenny Florian, I think that's a pretty memorable one, and first season Ultimate Fighter, you know, didn't seem to be too affected by the impact of the elbow other than the fact it was bleeding a lot and it was in a bad spot with blood going into his eye, and the fight had to be stopped.
You know, you hate to see that when a fighter gets hit with an elbow. You know, the first thing they do is get this sort of panic look on their face and then touch their glove to their head to see if they're bleeding, right? Franklin did that once as well in his fight with Luwazo.
Well, Deweese, he was trying to cover up the cut with his hand. That's
Yeah, it's a terrible way to have a fight ended, especially when you're alert enough to realize that that's exactly what's happening. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it depends. Really depends on the fighter. But I think fighters, I think a lot of fighters, that's their go-to. That's their go-to thing, right? And I think that in pride, I think it forces fighters to be far more technically competent. At least the fighters in their shows. That's just my opinion, but, you know, I think there are certainly a lot of exceptions in the UFC.
Yeah, I think there's an argument you can be made for either case, really. I mean, you know, even with Pride, though, we've all seen quite a few fights where a guy gets a top dominant position and, like you mentioned, can't end the fight. So he can't use elbows, so it ends up kind of, you know, becoming a boring fight. But, I mean, look at someone like Tito Ortiz, he made his career on elbows, or most of his wins have come benefactor of elbows and opening up cuts and stopping fighters. But so, yeah, the MSC, that fight has been switched. Jason McDonald taking on Edwin Aguilar. Main event, like we talked to Victor Valimaki, he's taking on Jason Day. I always want to call him James for some reason. And a couple other interesting fights on that card. Fabio Holanda, who's the jiu-jitsu coach for such notable fighters like Patrick Cote. He's done some work with George St. Pierre, Jonathan Goulet, great Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor out of Quebec. He's taken on Mike Bell, who's like a local Edmonton fighter, more known for his striking. So some interesting fights on that card, and then we've got the IFL, of course, coming up. Chris Wardecki taking on Ed West. Some other notable fights on that card. Alex Schoenhauer taking on Hamanaka, who people haven't seen in a while. I don't think he's been on any major cards since his Pride fights. And then Devin Cole taking on Alan Goez. We talked to Devin in our last show. And, of course, the big fight on that is Matt Lillen taking on Jeremy Horn, two of the better 185-pound fighters in the world. And, Brendan, what do you think of this fight? Do you think... you know, we talked to Devin Cole a little bit about it and asked him if he felt there had been enough hype about this fight. Do you think that people are really noticing, or do you think that's kind of a... If not, do you think that's a byproduct of the fact that a lot of people still sort of use the... unfortunately, call these guys boring fighters?
Is this fight happening at 185?
I believe so, yeah. On the site, it's listed at 185.
I think, I think they have traditionally both been thought of as boring fighters, and it's interesting because they make more charismatic fighters look boring. But it will be interesting to see the clash of styles here and what the fight would look like. And I think it very well might look like a really great technical grappling match, which would be fantastic from my perspective because it's one of the things I love to see. So I think these two guys might actually be a very good matchup. I think the last great grappler we saw, Lindland fight was probably Joe Dorkson, and Dorkson that fight had a slower pace, but Dorkson was trying all sorts of crazy submissions from the bottom and stuff like that, and it was interesting to see how Lindland responded to that and how he ended up dominating that fight. I really can't see this going much differently. I see Dorkson and Horn as being very similar fighters, so I don't hold up much hope for Horn, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, Lindland in the Dorkson fight, you know, he managed to avoid the submissions. He took on Antonio Shembri, who's a well-known grappler in England, cage rage, defeated him in the third round. You know, I just think that I agree with what you're saying. I think Lindland probably will be able to take Jeremy down and avoid the submissions and will probably get the win. But, you know, as far as I just kind of want to get back to the boring fighter debate a little bit, I think especially in the case of Jeremy Horn, if you look at, you know, the last few years of his career, I mean, this guy has some knockouts. He's got a lot of submission wins. And I think that people... you know, tend to call him that still because of some of the earlier fights that they remember, whether it be in Pride or UFC. And, you know, they remember him as that way, as kind of a stifling type of attack. And you know, it's too bad. I look back at Jeremy Horn, and I think on his recent comeback to the UFC, you know, he should completely be applauded for the way he approached Chuck Liddell in that fight. You know, kept coming at him, showed a lot to me. And I really think that if it wasn't for that lackluster performance against Trevor Prangley, that maybe things would have been different. I know he was in a tough place because of his relationship with Rich Franklin, and the likelihood that those two would fight was very small. So I kind of feel sorry for him in that respect. But, you know, when they give him a guy like Chael Sonnen, who he'd already beaten twice before for his third and final fight of that contract, you know, it's too bad that had to happen, because I think, you know, he would have been a great presence in the middleweight division in the UFC.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I think again he and Joe Dirksen are very, very similar fighters, and I think probably one of them would have become the gatekeeper. The fact that Horn's last fight, it was understood that he was basically gone, I think, at that time. The fact that it wasn't even on television spoke volumes to their impression of what they wanted to do with him and what his place in the company was. But I think, you know, everyone coming back, Horn had been out of the UFC for a long time. He didn't have much of a name in the sort of mainstream fans, and his showing against Liddell, although it was kind of it was kind of heroic, it wasn't really a great fight. It was kind of like when is Horn going to go down?
Right. Yeah.
And he took a terrible pummeling. So I don't think he got, you know, he made the agreement to come in at 205. He's not really a legitimate 205 fighter, I don't think. And, but that's the agreement that he made with the UFC, was to come in challenged Liddell. So I'm not sure. I think they didn't make the best matches for him. But at the time, you know, he chose to come in and he chose to fight those people. So, you know, I can't say he was sort of an innocent victim either.
I guess, you know, it's understandable to an extent, the UFC. I mean, if he wasn't going to fight Rich Franklin, then they've got a problem right away. But, you know, I just can't wait personally until we have the day when MMA is such a big sport that some of these fighters, like a Matt Lilland or Jeremy Horn, to bring up two as an example, are more appreciated by a wider body of the fans. And yes, of course, you're always going to be partial to the strikers, the guys who have the highlight reel fights. I understand that, but hopefully the sport gets to a point kind of similarly to boxing, where people can appreciate, you know, fighters for their skills and their abilities to shut down those kind of highlight reel fighters. You know, like even someone like Ricardo Arona. I mean, I'll be the first to admit, you know, if he had won the 205 title in Pride, you know, not always the most entertaining fighter to watch, but I can still appreciate him for his skill. And, you know, I think some credit should be given to Pride for the fact that they have given him some opportunity to take the title. And, you know, the UFC, I guess, as well, they gave a chance to Jeremy Horn. But, you know, you look at someone like Matt Lindland, who's coming off a fight at 205 against one of the better fighters in the world at 205, or at least at one point Quinton Jackson was. You know, there's another guy who's just an unbelievable competitor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Lindland is probably, at this time, I would have to rank him still, you know, one, two, or three probably two or three in the 185s, and no one has really taken that away from him, in my opinion. And I've criticized him for not being the best looking fighter in the past as well. But that's the name of the game. If you can step into the ring and beat the guy across from you, then you're a better fighter. And it's up to the promoters to decide, you know, where they want to put them. And you know, the UFC fired Lindland basically for no reason or for some grotesque technicality, and I think there was a good reason why they wanted to get him out of there, because he didn't play into their plans, and I think he was probably the only legitimate contender at the time to take out Franklin, who was really, you know, a poster boy.
Yeah, but I gather then that we're both picking Lindland to beat Horn.
I will pick Lindland to beat Horn.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the. The votes are going to remain at 3-2 then, because I'm taking Lindland as well, so my lead will be protected. Yeah, and I guess we could wait for Miletich and Gracie pick that one as far as the IFL fights go. I mean, there are some notable fights coming up on both those cards, but as far as making the picks, the marquee picks that we seem to usually do, I think those will be the two that we'll have to look at. So, yeah, I guess that's about it then, buddy.
Time to enjoy our last holiday of the summer.
Yes, celebrate your solidarity with your fellow working man. And
on Labor Day.
Yeah, that's right, on Labor Day. And yeah.
They have a holiday this weekend in the States?
Yeah, they do. Labor Day as
What's
well.
It called?
I believe it's Labor Day as well.
I don't think so.
Are you sure? I think so.
Yeah. Someone write in and clear that up for us.
Yes.
And also a free T-shirt to whoever scripts out the first 5 minutes of our show in a more interesting way.
Well, no, we don't.
I'll buy the T-shirt, Kels. I don't care, you know.
Yeah, well, if someone does it. I mean, but how many episodes are we talking about?
I guess we should have two to choose from.
But how many episodes are we talking about here?
But just one.
Just one. They have to.
So we do
just
the same
the
one
intro.
Anyway, so.
You just have to script the intro.
We just need a more interesting one. We have to get the characters right.
Right.
Kelsey is more of a neurotic optimist about things, and I'm, I don't know how I'd describe myself.
A brooding, sarcastic pessimist?
Yeah, or just a general dick, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Yeah, a bit of a dick.
Yeah, for sure.
But in a redeeming way.
Well, yeah, you have your moments.
Well, okay.
All right, buddy.
All right.
We'll talk to you.
One T-shirt is on the line. One full contact T-shirt.
Yep, for sure.
Or
FCFighter.com.
Whichever you wish.
All right, this is terrible radio right now. This is terrible. Brennan, we'll talk to you later this week.
Have a happy Labor Day, Kelsey.
Yes, thank you.